Zionist regime's number one supporter. The United States uses Israel as an outpost for its own imperialist initiatives in Western Asia and North Africa. In a sense, Tel Aviv regime acts as a 51st state, mirroring the inception of the first American colonies, a violent settler colonial formation that ethnically cleanses the indigenous population. For the illegitimate Zionist regime to continue existing, it must exert oppression not only over the Palestinians, but over any of its neighbors that insist on supporting the Palestinian cause. This brings up an inconvenience. For the regime to survive, it needs American backing. It needs it in the form of financial aid, military aid, but most importantly, in the form of political support. The political backing in the form of congressional resolutions, statements, and calls for support can only be deemed legitimate to the public eye if the public approves of the actions of the Zionist regime. The Zionist regime does not need to convince the entire world that its horrific war crimes are legitimate. It only needs to convince a Western audience. Without this key ingredient, the Zionist entity loses the very little credibility it has, along with all financial and political backing. The sly propaganda campaign is often conducted subtly using photo shoots, exclusive photo opportunities for only Western media outlets, and broadcasting doctored images and false narratives on Western social media applications. So, on one front, we have the Zionist occupation manipulating reality to show themselves as humanitarians and moral to a Western audience. This is to justify their criminal onslaught of hospitals and other civilian populated areas. On the next front, we see the Zionist media blatantly lying, hoping no one questions them. The Zionist regime's military spokesperson Daniel Hagari posted a video of an Israeli troop inspecting what they claim is an area where hostages were being held within a hospital. The troop points to a chart on the wall that contains dates with some Arabic lettering. He then claims that the Arabic on the chart are the names of Hamas fighters, and that they use this chart to organize watchkeeping shifts over supposed hostages. As confirmed by hundreds of netizens, these are in fact the days of the week. What the Zionist regime troop is pointing to is not a chart of Hamas fighter shifts. It is a calendar. Unfortunately, this video was broadcast on various news networks like BBC, CNN, Fox News, and more. On the social media front, one may be able to find comments that question the validity of these claims or make corrections. On Western news media outlets, which do not question the Zionist officials, but rather act as stenographers for them, these claims are taken for fact without any investigation. Thousands to millions of people likely saw this footage and took this embarrassing, blatant lie as fact, simply because they do not know Arabic and were easily manipulated. Without any pushback from journalists, Zionist officials use Western media outlets as battering rams for their genocidal lines in attempts to normalize the brutal violence on the Palestinian people. Zionists rely on three major factors to maintain a hold over their Western audience: the ignorance of the audience, allowing them to manipulate reality freely; their status quo as U.S. allies, allowing them to present themselves as just; and lack of investigation, or perhaps willful omission of investigation from Western media, who seemingly are the only ones who enjoy exclusive access to Israeli regime operations. However, people are catching up to these lies. Not only are netizens exposing the fraudulent statements from Zionist officials in real time, but independent organizations are also now stepping up to the plate to demand authentic evidence that is corroborated by underground Palestinian testimonials. Here, the Zionist regime is suffering embarrassingly. They are too used to being taken word by word. And now, they are scrambling multiple times. The occupation regime has deleted videos it claimed were concrete evidence of Hamas hospital operations when everyday people did their own investigation and concluded that the claims are based on staged photographs and fabrications. Even Western outlets, which seemingly act as spokespeople of their own on behalf of the Israeli regime, are being forced to report on the Zionist regime's walked-backed statements and deleted videos. Technological advancements and the ease of information transfer has stripped the occupation regime of the privilege of enjoying Western ignorance. Prior to these advancements, condemnation for the Zionist regime primarily existed within the so-called Global South. This time around, things have changed. The images and videos coming from Gaza have invoked sadness, disgust, and horror in the Western public sphere, which has typically stood by the Zionist regime for decades, often repeating Zionist lies as facts. Meanwhile, the Zionists can't conjure up a shred of truth to back up their brazenly false claims. It has reached a boiling point where, in the United States alone, hundreds of thousands are marching every weekend for Palestine. Activists are shutting down offices, weapons manufacturing plants, roads and bridges. Every lie exposed is serving as shovels worth of dirt in the grave of the colonial regime. The alternative? Israel shows its true face and leaves it up to humanity to decide. Either way, it loses.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by famous Iranian Shiite orator and lecturer Hojatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
پیغمبر اکرم فرمود اصلا مؤمن عاقل زرنگ کیس اونی که یاد مرگ باشه.
The Holy Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, stated, "A true clever believer is one who always reminds death." Once, some of the companions of Prophet Muhammad were talking about the person and admired him a lot. The Prophet asked them, "Does this person, whom you admire a lot, talk about death, grave, and Day of Judgment?" The companions answered, "We didn't see him talking about this very much." Then the Prophet stated, "Do not admire a person who does not remind death, because such a person is not grown up spiritually."
بعد فرمود که اکیس و ناس اکثر هم ذکرن للموت زرنگترین مردم اکیس و ناس کیسترین مردم.
Then the Holy Prophet said, "The cleverest among believers is one who always reminds death and prepares himself for it." The Holy Prophet, through these statements, is giving us a criterion for recognition of a true believer. In other words, the true believer is one who sees himself every day in the mirror of death and is always prepared for the time of death. From the other side, the ignorant one is the person who is careless about the time of death. This type of person cannot grow spiritually based on the criterion that Prophet Muhammad gave us. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales.
Roundtable Discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the degrees of conceit. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Before we discuss the degrees of conceit, let me share a story with you to understand what conceit can potentially do to us. Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam, the fifth divinely appointed Imam, the Immaculate Imam, says, two men went into a mosque. One of them was pious and the other was sinful. When they came back, the pious man was sinful and the sinful man was pious. The one who was pious boasted about his worship and remembered his good actions. For this reason, he fell. The one who was sinful felt ashamed, and he had this sorrow for his evil and bad deeds, remembering his sins and asking forgiveness from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. For this reason, he was purified. This is a lesson for us, and this is narrated from Imam Baqir alayhi salam. The lesson for us in this story is that when we go towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, when we go in the huzur and in the presence of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, we're not supposed to be conceitful. We're not supposed to be remembering and recalling our good actions. Instead, we should be looking at our deficiencies and seeking forgiveness from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Because if we do conceit and if we are conceitful in front of Allah, then of course we are going to lose that spiritual status and we're going to fall down just the way this person fell down according to this tradition. But if we are humble in front of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, if we are seeking forgiveness of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, if we are pleading to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for all our shortcomings and, you know, asking Him for His mercy, this is something that is going to raise us high. And this is what Islam expects from us. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing the degrees of conceit, and before the break we gave you a small story which had a very strong lesson for all of us. Imam Muhammad al-Baqir alayhi salam, the fifth divinely appointed Imam, he said, three things destroy man. Number one, magnifying his actions. Number two, ignoring his sins and being conceited for some corrected ideas. This is number three. So if you notice, Imam Baqir alayhi salam is informing us that these three things are going to destroy us. They are a destruction of a believer. Okay? Unfortunately, we all tend to do this to a certain extent, you know, to certain degrees. Unfortunately, almost everyone, you know, except for the Urafa and the Awliya and, you know, the prophets and Imams. We're not talking about them right now. We're talking like average people like us. We end up doing conceit in some form and shape, unfortunately. We turn a blind eye towards our deficiencies and the sins we have performed. And we love to keep looking at our good deeds. Even worse, we sometimes try to magnify and highlight our good deeds. Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam, the sixth divinely appointed Imam, said, he who yields to conceit will perish.
Similarly, the seventh divinely appointed Imam Musa Kazim alayhi salam said, "Conceit has degrees. One of them is to decorate evil actions to seem good. In this case, conceit causes man to think he is doing good. Another variety of it comes to a believer when he tries to remind Allah of his belief, while Allah has the right of reminding him of his favors to him." So, brothers and sisters, it is essential that we consciously try to eliminate and remove conceit from our lives.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
The Israeli military have ordered doctors, patients, and displaced people at Gaza's Al-Shifa hospital to evacuate the medical compound, forcing some people to leave at gunpoint. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. The Israeli military have ordered doctors, patients and displaced people at Gaza's Al-Shifa hospital to evacuate the medical compound, forcing some people to leave at gunpoint. The forced evacuation order has caused panic and mayhem. The World Health Organization has issued its own assessment of the situation in the Gaza Strip's Al-Shifa hospital, describing it as a death zone and the situation as desperate. The United Nations Health Organization released its report early on Sunday, 19th of November, just a day after a short and very high-risk mission into the hospital on Saturday, 18th of November. The Israeli regime has turned Gaza's hospitals into a specific target of its ongoing war of genocide, alleging that those facilities house Palestinian resistance fighters and their equipment. On Saturday, Mai Al-Kaila, the Palestinian health minister in the occupied West Bank, strongly condemned Israel for committing genocide against the healthcare system in the Gaza Strip. The Al-Shifa Hospital, Gaza's biggest hospital, has taken the brunt of the Israeli assaults on the territory's healthcare system, with the Zionist regime claiming that it houses a command center belonging to the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas. The situation has forced scores of sick and injured, some of them amputees, to flee the hospital towards the seafront without ambulances, along with displaced people, doctors and nurses, according to the World Health Organization. The WHO added that only 291 patients, including 32 babies in extremely critical condition and 25 healthcare workers, have remained inside the Al-Shifa complex. Signs of shelling and gunfire were evident. The World Health Organization team saw a mass grave at the entrance of the hospital and were told more than 80 people were buried there. The World Health Organization said in a statement, "A lack of clean water, fuel, medicines, food and other essential aid has caused the hospital to basically stop functioning as a medical facility. Corridors and the hospital grounds were filled with medical and solid waste, increasing the risk of infection," according to the World Health Organization. Also on Sunday, World Health Organization's chief, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, wrote on X social media platform that the world body was working with partners to develop an urgent evacuation plan and asked for full facilitation of this plan. "We continue to call for protection of health and of civilians," he said, lamenting that the current situation is unbearable and unjustifiable. Meanwhile, Iran says it does not want further spread of Israel's genocidal war in Gaza, but the approach taken by the United States and the Israeli regime in the region makes the expansion of war quite possible. The Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amin Abdullahian made the remark in an interview with the Financial Times. Iran's top diplomat noted that during the early weeks and days of the war, American officials sent messages to Iran through certain diplomatic channels claiming that Washington was not after expansion of the scope of the war. Over the past 40 days, messages have been exchanged between Iran and the United States via the U.S. interest section at the Swiss embassy in Tehran, Hossein Amin Abdullahian emphasized. Amin Abdullahian added, "In response to the United States, we said that Iran does not want the war to spread any further. But due to the approach of the United States and the Israeli regime in the region, if the Israeli war crimes continue, then it is possible that the conflict would spread further." Amin Abdullahian added, "The United States has sent similar messages to Lebanon's Hezbollah movement, as well asking the movement to show self-restraint." The Iranian foreign minister said despite those messages, the United States has offered its full support to Israel and supplied the regime with all kinds of military equipment and weapons. He emphasized that Washington's unbridled support for the Tel Aviv regime proves that the United States is not committed to its claim of being against the further spread of the Gaza war. Washington, which has been trying to justify the Tel Aviv regime's ferocious attacks on Gaza as a means of self-defense, has been also casting its veto against the United Nations Security Council resolutions that call on the Israeli regime to cease its aggression. The Al Jazeera television network has also covered the same story. The Israeli military ordered doctors, patients and displaced people at Gaza's Al-Shifa hospital to evacuate the medical compound, forcing some to leave at gunpoint, according to Palestinian officials who talked to Al Jazeera. Doctors said the facility, which has been under siege by Israeli troops for several days, was now largely deserted hours after soldiers ordered people to leave the hospital on Saturday, 18th of November. But in a post on X, formerly known as Twitter, the Israeli army denied giving any order, saying the Israeli military responded to the request of the director of Al-Shifa Hospital to allow Gazan citizens who were sheltering in the hospital and those who wished to evacuate from the hospital towards the humanitarian crossing in the Gaza Strip via a secure access. However, Mohammad Zarud, Director General of Hospitals in Gaza, told Al Jazeera, "I categorically deny these false allegations from the Israeli army. I'm telling you we were forced to leave the Al-Shifa hospital at gunpoint." He said the Israeli army called the hospital management at 8 a.m. local time and told them to evacuate the medical facility, the largest hospital in Gaza, within an hour. They were directed to exit along a route where charred bodies were strewn across the street, he added. Ismail Al-Thawabta, Director General of the Government Media Office in Gaza, said the Israeli army forced out more than 500 wounded people and patients at gunpoint. The Al-Shifa Hospital has turned into a detention camp, an interrogation center, a military barracks and mass grave altogether, he said. More than 7,000 people, including patients in critical condition and newborn babies fighting for their lives, were sheltered inside the Al-Shifa Hospital. A doctor in the hospital told Al Jazeera that around 9 a.m. local time, they received the order from the Israelis to leave the hospital in 1 hour, but that it was impossible to evacuate everyone as they did not have ambulances or transportation to transfer patients. "The situation caused a great state of panic and fear in the hospital, Al Jazeera's Yumna El-Sayed said, reporting from Khan Yunis in southern Gaza. Many people left Al-Shifa Hospital on foot, but patients who cannot move, amputees and those with critical condition, were forced to remain behind with a handful of medical staff. Mohammed Abu Salmiya, the director of the Al-Shifa Hospital, told Al Jazeera. Al-Salmiya added, "The situation is really dire." Those in Al-Shifa had included at least 300 patients, many of them in critical condition, as well as thousands of displaced families. It also included at least 35 premature babies who already, for 8 days now, have been out of their incubators because of the lack of oxygen and lack of electricity. Al Jazeera's Yumna El-Sayed reported, "There were 39 babies who had been left without incubators. Four of them died later on Friday, 17th of November, and five of them are currently severely ill." The Palestinian Minister of Health, Mai Al-Kaila, said the international institutions should intervene and transfer the premature babies from Al-Shifa Hospital to hospitals in either the occupied West Bank or in Egypt.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pit.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Youth Station.
Yeah, we're here again. I am Bita
and I'm Asma at your service. Home again.
Yeah, exactly. Our pleasure to be here.
Yes,
at your station.
Course. Just as I was coming here, it was a traffic jam, and then it was just devastating.
Yeah, I know. It's always like they're fighting, shouting.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know.
Not just people. The thing is that I was also feeling that, okay, I want to shout. Come on. It's too much.
Yeah. Yeah, it
and
happens
it's not
a lot.
Just in these situations. It happens a lot in our lives. You see, this life of speedy sort of things, we don't get to achieve anything at the right moment because time is just flying so fast because we have a lot of things to do. It makes you just crazy angry.
You know, sometimes everything seems so overwhelming. You know,
yeah.
We cannot take it anymore. And I feel like you have to, I don't know, you have to do something. And this thing is mostly like finding someone to, you know, just feel relieved.
Exactly.
And, you know, it happens a lot for me because I live in Tehran and Tehran is really, really full
That's
of traffic.
That's the capital.
Yeah, the capital city. And, you know.
So it's very natural of it.
Exactly.
We have to run all the time as if it's a competition.
And it's like a burden on our shoulders.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think the process that we have in our soul, which are related to our emotions and feelings, are the process that needs time, you know.
Now, one of the consequences of this running so hard and feeling in a haste and feeling in a competition, as if you're just participating in a big competition, brings you to the point of being an angry person.
Exactly.
And this anger sometimes changes into rage. And the rage is something that really needs to be controlled.
You know, this is something that we mostly see in youth generation, that they are somehow angrier than the other generations. And, you know, it has many reasons. You know, talk about
yeah.
this
What about we go for a short break and then we come
You're
back for the
You're making me
reasons.
Angry.
Oh, please, simmer down. Okay, let's go for a short break and then we'll be back in no time.
The
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Yes, being angry is something that is common right now. Nowadays, we see it everywhere. People are feeling too much of rage and, well, it's not true if we say we don't know why, because there are many reasons for that and because it's pretty natural, according to those reasons, to be angry. But then again, we're human beings and we have to control it. We have to rein it in. We have to, you know, just control. Cool down.
Yeah, exactly. The issue is not the anger itself. It's about controlling this anger that we feel in ourselves. And, you know, I hate sport. I hate it. I don't know
why. On the contrary, I love it.
Yeah, it's kind of clear. One of the best methods to actually, you know, have this
to pour it all out. I was just about to say that. Going to gym is one of the best ways to control your rage and anger. Whenever I go there, it feels like, okay.
It feels like hell.
No. It feels like I have all my energies that are inside. They feel just like coming out. When I come out of the gym, it feels like I feel lighter. There's no more burden on my shoulder. Though it has done nothing to me, but just physically I'm trying to pour it all out. I'm trying to give all those bad vibes and bad energies out, and then that really works.
It really works, even for me that I hate sport. But, you know, it's a physical alternative. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not the exactly solution to this anger. Yeah. I think instead of going for these kind of things, like going to nature, looking at trees.
Nature is a healer, actually.
These are good ways to deal with your anger, but these are not solutions.
Yeah,
so
they're not.
You have to do something, really, for the main reason that you are angry. Most of the time, you know, as youth generation, we're full of energy. And we have to do something to actually pour this energy out of ourselves.
Yeah.
But the only thing that we can do these days is to make our future, study or work. Yeah. One of these two, unfortunately. And we don't have any kind of...
This itself, just the thing that you mentioned, is the source of anger for many people.
It is. For many
people. We have seen among our friends.
Yeah, we're running for money. No matter whether I'm studying to work after my study, and or I'm working for money. So it's all about money. And if you're angry for
having
more money...
That's the new world, you know?
Yeah, it is.
Because without money, you technically are not going to be able to have a character even in society.
You know, I think we have to reach this point of acceptance. Okay, this is life. We have some needs, and one of these needs is money and making your future as a youth generation. So you shouldn't be angry like at your parents, at the people at the street. Mm-hmm. And wherever you go, you are so nervous or something. Just stop it.
Well, it's nice you mentioned something. Recently, I've been studying a play by Osborne. It's the title of it is Look Back in Anger. The thing is that now I don't want to take you into literature, but the whole
story...
Which
I'm really interested.
And I love it, of course. The whole story is about a man who's lost in his past, and then whenever he just talks to everyone, he has too much of rage towards everybody, as if he's just taking his revenge from every single person in society, even the closest people to him, to he himself. So the thing is that he feels too much of anger, and as you go through the play, you just do not understand why is he so angry. And then there comes a moment in which he just comes to reveal why that has happened to him. Why is he like this? And then he says that nobody like me has suffered. I guess most of the time in our lives, we feel that anger and rage just because we feel that, okay, this is me alone in this world suffering this much of problems.
Yeah.
Suffering from this much of heartbreak.
And, you know, the underlying reason of this behavior is exactly the lack of connection with Allah Almighty that we are feeling these days in this world. We feel like we're alone. Nobody's there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're getting drowned in darkness.
While we forget the very fact that he's there and he's speaking to you and he's listening to you, you just don't see him because maybe there are curtains in front of your eyes and even your ears have been deaf by the wrong things you have done and you have never cared about the consequences.
Yeah.
So I guess it's a reality check we have to go for. The reasons of why I do not feel that much connected to Allah, in which that if I face any problem, I say to myself that, okay, he's there. he would help me. And there is no need for me to just go so angry with everyone.
And not only this kind of working and the connection that you have with Allah Almighty, but also is there this need that you have to go for these adjectives of Allah Almighty, all of these personas, all of these features.
Yeah, in order to practice it yourself.
Because one of the things that I've noticed in these angry people is that they put the blame on other people most of the time. This is their logic, that you are the person and you have to be punished, and your punishment is my anger.
And so, tell us something, Bita. Sometimes this anger that comes out is just the result of the traumas that you had in your life with your family, with your friends, and the things that you cannot say to anyone. You show it with anger. Sometimes when you dig deeper in the soul of these angry people, when you sit with them, you see that they're nice people, but unfortunately sometimes because they lack this, how should I say it? If I call it knowledge, if I call it skill, it would be a better word.
Yeah.
They lack this skill of communication. Sometimes I want something from you. I don't know how to say it to you. I keep it for myself and I feel, okay, she must understand it herself. But there's no such a revelation for every person in this world. You should just speak about the things you feel they are right.
These people do not know how to show their, sorrow for something else that happened in their life.
Exactly.
And they show it as anger towards other people. But the thing is, we're living in a modern world, okay? We are living in a world full of awareness, full of information, full of knowledge, and full of everything. So wherever you go, there is a kind of expertise, there is an expert there for you to help you.
Yeah. I have seen many people who have been so angry when they were young, but now when I see them as a mature person, I understand that they have worked so much on themselves that they can control it. Like as in my cousins, when I just look at them, then I would have noticed that they have changed so much. All I mean to say is that even if you are an angry person, even if you think that's a part of you, even if you think that's your nature, trust me, you can change it. And there are many ways out there for it. Sometimes with the kind of field of a study that you pick for yourself, you're going to control it.
Yeah.
Sometimes, I don't know, people are different. Maybe as you just mentioned, some people would take a special method for themselves, as in going to gym, watching movies, dividing their times into specific eras in which they could be engaged in different things instead
even
of just thinking.
Sometimes,
Do not stay idle. Devote some time for yourself. Devote some time for your soul. And try to get closer to Allah, who would help you. And then if there is any trigger in the outside world, if there is any person who makes you angry, if there is any attitude of other people that makes you angry, just don't think about them. I know that's difficult. Easier said than done. But then trust me, it could work.
It was a process I went through myself, that I was an angry person when I was like 13, 14 years old. And I was like, I was expecting everyone to be at my service, to be there for me, to do this, to do that, to allow me to do this and to do that. So sometimes this anger comes from your expectations. Okay, when you expect someone to do this and to do that and to be this and to be that, then it will lead you to an angry person who's always furious.
I'm so sorry. But then there's another expectation. We have to go for another break.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So welcome back. This is Youth Station. Bita and I were talking about rage and anger. Well, there are many reasons for anger. We know that. And it's very difficult to control it. Again, we know that. There is no one who claimed that, okay, it's very easy to control it.
No, it's not.
No, but then there are ways to control it. We talked about some of them, like as in get closer to nature. Try to strengthen your bond with your Lord. Allah is the best remedy for all your problems. And then also going to gym and pretty much more of those things. In our narrations by Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, they say, whenever you feel angry, do not sit in the very same position. Try to change your situation, whatever it is.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, the concept of anger is way too vaster than just talking in 14 or 13 minutes, okay? And because there are many ways of showing this anger itself. Sometimes people are angry with themselves. They hurt themselves.
There are many reasons.
And, you know, self-injuries and so many other things that we have, which are really sad. At last, this is you who have to. You know, there is an obligation on you to control yourself towards this feeling, and you're responsible for that. Okay? This anger itself is not something bad. It can be as a kind of motivation for you.
If you control it, it might be a source of power. Creativity for you.
Exactly. Just you have to learn and practice.
Work on yourself.
That comes out of nowhere. This is you.
Exactly. Yeah. So you're responsible for every single thing you do. And in the end, well, all the angry people out there, we love you. Everybody loves you. We know that you all have a kind heart. Most of the time, when you just talk to them, you just understand they have a very kind heart.
Exactly.
But unfortunately, the situation, the environment, the all the traumas, everything around has made them these monsters that look like monsters to other people. But honestly, if you just let them prove themselves, if you just give them time, if you just help them control it, then everything is going to be solved. So this is all the time that we had for today's episode. I totally enjoyed it, Vita. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome. The pleasure
is mine. And then thank you to our listeners. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif.
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
The limelight.
Since October 7th, the Zionist regime's police forces have barred most Palestinians from attending Friday prayers at Al-Aqsa Mosque. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, scenes of worshippers being prevented by Israeli regime forces from praying at Al-Quds, Al-Aqsa Mosque, have become commonplace since October 7th. The holiest Muslim site in Palestine usually draws tens of thousands of faithful for prayers every Friday, but seemingly arbitrary restrictions on who can enter the compound mean protests regularly erupt at the site as worshippers are refused entry. Over the past few weeks, the Zionist regime troops have fired tear gas on Palestinians attempting to pray in the streets surrounding Al-Aqsa and attacked some journalists covering the events. Muhammad Salamiya, an 18-year-old man who has not been able to pray at Al-Aqsa since the beginning of the war, said, "They don't let us in, oppress us and hit us." Jihad Taha 47, who was also barred from going in Friday prayers, said the restrictions are part of a wider campaign against the Palestinian residents of Al-Quds. He said, "The goal is to put pressure on residents of the old city in general and the residents of Al-Quds in general." While young men are more likely than others to be stopped, they have not been the only targets. Basima Zaidan, a 57-year-old woman who walked from Al-Quds neighborhood of Ras al-Amu to reach the mosque, said she was turned back by police officers after waiting for 30 minutes. She said he told her to go back, return to Ras al-Amud. The prayers, which usually see an average of 50,000 worshippers in and around the mosque, only had around 4,000 people recently. Mustafa Abu Suey, a member of the Islamic Waqf Council in Al-Quds, told Middle East Eye, "There are extremely tight restrictions to prevent the worshippers from coming in. There are not letting young people come in, for example, alongside people who are 80 years old sometimes, but it is very dependent on the individual police officer that has the authority." The Islamic Waqf, or Religious Endowment, is a Jordanian-appointed organization in charge of the control and management of Islamic sites in Al-Aqsa's religious compound. They have often spoken out against the Zionist regime's increasing pressure on the mosque and its surrounding area. Many Muslims fear that the Zionist regime will use the tumult of the ongoing war to implement a lasting change to who controls the holy site, which Jews refer to as the Temple Mount. Abu Suey worries the situation may be exploited to implement long-term restrictions on the compound, adding that the Waqf will never accept such circumstances. These restrictions on Muslim prayers in the Old City coincide with growing pressure on the Armenian quarter of Al-Quds. There, the Armenian Christian community claims to be facing an existential threat following a murky and secretive deal that could see some 25% of the quarter sold to the Zionist settler communities. Ever since the start of the current war in Gaza, the Zionist regime has placed heavy restrictions on worshippers wishing to reach the Al-Aqsa compound, setting up many checkpoints and not allowing those who don't live in Al-Quds to enter. Increased violence has also been seen in the West Bank, with the Zionist settler and army attacks killing over 170 Palestinians, and in East Al-Quds, where police forces tightened restrictions on the movement of people. Despite the increasing restrictions at Al-Aqsa, many Palestinians, such as Zaidan, say they will keep trying to access their religious sites. For them, the site is just as much as a symbol of their struggle against the Zionist occupation, as it is a revered spiritual site. Zaidan said, "My soul is for Al-Aqsa. My blood is for Al-Aqsa." According to Anadolu Agency, for the consecutive weeks, Israeli regime authorities imposed tight restrictions on Palestinians, banning them from entering Al-Aqsa Mosque in occupied East Al-Quds for Friday prayers, leaving the mosque all but empty. An official with Waqf Department in Al-Quds told Anadolu that only around 4,000 Palestinians, most of them elderly, had managed to reach the venerated mosque to perform Friday prayers, down sharply from the usual 50,000. The official who asked not to be named added that the mosque appeared to be empty due to strict Israeli regime control of the streets. Eyewitnesses told Anadolu Agency that the Zionist regime forces have been heavily deployed across the occupied East Al-Quds, particularly in the Old City and the entrances leading to the mosque. Hundreds of Palestinians were forced to perform Friday prayers in the streets near the Old City after being barred from entering the mosque itself. The Zionist regime site gave no reasons for restricting Muslims' access to Al-Aqsa for prayers. Before the Zionist regime's restrictions, at least 50,000 Palestinians used to perform the Friday prayers in Al-Aqsa Mosque, particularly on the holy day of Friday. Tensions have been high across the West Bank and East Al-Quds since October 7th. More than 200 Palestinians have been killed by the Zionist regime forces in the West Bank and East Al-Quds since October 7th.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The issue of Palestine is the first issue of the world of Islam by Ayatollah Khamenei. Sowing discord and conflict among Muslims is the enemy's trick to make Palestine ignored. January 19, 2014. It is in such conditions that the enemy is focusing all its efforts on making the Islamic Ummah forget about Palestine. How do they want to do this? They want to do this by creating discord, waging domestic wars, promoting deviant extremism in the name of Islam, religion, and Islamic Sharia. They want a group of people to say takfiri things against Muslims. The existence of these takfiri orientations, which have emerged in the world of Islam, is good news for arrogance and the enemies of the world of Islam. It is these takfiri orientations that attract the attention of Muslims towards insignificant issues instead of letting them pay attention to the truth about the existence of the malevolent Zionist regime. This is the exact opposite of what Islam wants. Islam has asked Muslims to be strong against the unbelievers, but compassionate amongst each other. The Holy Quran, chapter 48, verse 29.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Muslims should be strong against the enemies of religion. They should stand firm and they should not be influenced by the enemies. Being strong against unbelievers is the clear message of this ayah. Muslims should be compassionate towards one another. They should stay together and join hands, and they should hold fast to the rope which Allah stretches out for them. This is the command of Islam. Now, what happens if an orientation emerges which divides Muslims into believers and unbelievers, which targets a group of people as unbelievers and which pits Muslims against one another? Who can doubt the role of arrogance and the security services of arrogant and malevolent governments in creating, supporting, and enriching these orientations and in equipping them with weapons? These arrogant powers sit and plan for this. The world of Islam should attend to this issue because it is a grave danger. Unfortunately, a number of